Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. On this week's episode, Nick and I are over at Goose Island Beer Company, sampling the new variations of Bourbon County Stout. What did we do these last 3 weeks, Zoe? What'd you make it to?
Yeah, because, you know, you got a cork popped out, boom, it just flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
The legend, Mr. Pete Crowley. I love Pete Crowley, man.
How's that beer? What you think it is?
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this. Raw, raw, raw.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Hey, I'm Nick White.
And we're back on location at a new spot, not too far from where we record.
Yeah.
And we're at Goose Island Beer Company.
Yeah, we're here with Mike Siegel, man, the innovation manager. So, and we're here to talk about Bourbon County Stout. Black Friday is on the horizon, man.
Yeah, Black Friday is on the horizon. What, for 2 weeks away, a week and a half, really, right?
Yeah.
The official day when all these great beers get released.
Yeah. So we got the full arsenal of all the 2014 varieties here, and we got Mike here to talk about it. So Mike, you're the innovation manager over at Goose, is that right?
That is correct. That is correct indeed. And here to pour some great beers for you guys. I'm just gonna get going. You lead the way if you got questions. But I got the 2014 barley wine. We're gonna kick us off with.
Nice. I guess as we talk about these, we should also talk about FOBAB, because that just happened, and these beers fall right in line with what FOBAB was all about, and, you know, we got a chance to try some of these this past weekend.
Sure.
Yeah. Right on. Well, cheers, first of all.
Cheers. Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks.
So, Mike, how was your FOBAB?
Excellent. We had a big old corner booth. We poured all these variants, all five of these. In addition to these, we poured a two-year-old Templeton Rye aged Bourbon County Stout, a two-year-old barley wine, and then we did. So we sponsored the Barricale portion of the festival this year. This was back in January. We decided to work with Justin to do a variation on the Replicale project. So instead of everybody doing the same recipe and bringing it to the festival, we decided to give everybody the same barrel.
Oh, cool. And so those barrels were from you guys.
Yeah. We gave everybody a barrel, a wild turkey barrel, and basically said, do whatever you want with it. The recipe portion's up to you guys, but the common ingredient in this case was the barrel.
What?
Can I talk to there too?
Yeah, it should be.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw some really cool variants came out of that. I know Five Rabbits Yodo Con Leche was really good. I think that placed in one of the categories. And Transient had a beer called Betsy. It was like a creek that they put in one of those barrels. And they were pretty tasty.
Yeah. We'll see what Justin says. But I'm guessing this is something that could maybe be a tradition year over years to do a variation on that, on this theme.
Yeah, sure. People were kind of lined up at a couple of them for here and there. So it was nice to see. And I think it was a nice, I guess, additional thing of all these beers you're never going to have again. It's kind of like one-off things.
Sure.
So we're here. We got all the BCS varietals here. We've got now there's different barrels used on most of these. I want to talk about these in a minute. I want to back up a little bit, talk about a little bit of the history of BCS right now. In the beginning, it was, I think, Jim Beam barrels for 100 days, right? That's the legend, that the original beer, right? From 92 or something.
Yeah.
Right?
More or less, yeah. It's, of course, Greg Hall, former brewmaster, got the barrel. The legend says, sitting next to, I believe it was Booker No's son, maybe grandson, came in contact with him at a some sort of event. And from there, hooked up, got the barrel. They want to do something for batch 1000. An Imperial Stout. I don't know if this was a beer that existed prior, if this was something they served at the pub, or if the first incarnation of this stout really was going into that barrel. I'll have to ask Greg that next time I see him. But regardless, that was back in 1992, and for a number of years, I believe they continued to do it out of the pub, and then the first year that Fulton Street here, the production brewery, put it out was 2004.
Now, was it? Now, is it still Jim Beam barrels, or did you? I know, obviously, like the rye series are rye barrels, mm-hmm. but I'm talking about the bourbon barrels that you use. Are they? Is it still Jim Beam, or
we use a mix? We've certainly Beam and the Beam family is part of that, but we get our most of our barrels through a broker down in Kentucky. That actually is most of the work. They're a Scottish company that happens to have a father-son team down in Kentucky that works with the distilleries. And most of the distilleries are—they're dumping so many barrels that they don't want to deal direct. So we've tried. We'd love to buy barrels direct from any of these distilleries, but there's so many of them that they want a third party to just come up. You know, when they're done dumping barrels, this team shows up, loads up their truck, and then what Speyside does is sort through the barrels, and we're really looking for 8-plus-year-old barrels.
Okay.
The Beam family, like Knob Creek and Booker's. Heaven Hill, of course, we love Heaven Hill. Buffalo Trace, Wild Turkey, like I mentioned before, at least 5 or 6 distilleries. So right now, Bourbon County Stout is a blend of many different distilleries.
Okay.
The common denominator is we're looking, and we almost always get these older barrels, these 8-plus-year-old barrels, because we feel that extra age made for a more interesting bourbon, and therefore it's got a lot more to contribute to the beer itself. So that's really where we stand as far as the barrel goes right now. Now the barley wine, which we're drinking right now, is of course it's part of the Bourbon County family, but we use a blend of first and second use barrels. You know, when I say first use, it's the first use for beer. It's recently dumped of its bourbon. We get it hopefully within short order. Because obviously the barrels dry out when they sit too long, but that's usually not an issue. We get them, and we fill them up with beer. So that's first use, and that's about 30% for Bourbon County barley wine. It's about 30%. The other 70% come out of Bourbon County stout barrels. So barrels that had Bourbon County stout in them for the better part of a year were emptied, and then the barley wine went in after. So about a 70-30 blend. Because we like this to be, of course, we want the bourbon to come through. It's part of the Bourbon County family, but we don't want it to be quite as bold. The base beer here is, as you can see, it's still quite a dark beer, but you can actually see through it, unlike Bourbon County Stout.
It's like jet black.
Yeah.
This one has a little bit of the ruby hue.
Yeah, exactly. A deep ruby. It's an English-style barley wine, so it's really about the malt.
Okay.
It's not unlike an American style, which would be maybe have some late hopping or a more bitter character to it. This is really about the malt. It's a true barley wine. And a big beer at that. This one clocked in this year at, I think it was 12 and some change, 12.3. Okay. It's a big guy.
Yeah.
And aged, I want to say 6 months between the two types of barrels and then blended together.
Yeah. Sounds like blending's a big part of what you guys do with all these beers. Is that right?
Yeah, each barrel is, each cask is 53 gallons, mm-hmm. each bourbon barrel or rye barrel. And so to get, these days we're emptying, in an 8-hour day with 3 people, it's about 125 to 130 casks a day.
Wow.
And the whole year, the whole Bourbon County season, which started in late July and went to just a couple weeks ago of emptying, was about 3,000 casks.
Okay.
So that's why it takes so much longer, and we want this beer to age for mm-hmm. the better part of the year, so we have to fill that much earlier now. So we've been filling for November 2015, we've been filling since about August.
Okay.
So you got to think ahead.
Yeah, you got to be.
And
wow.
Fortunately, now we've got a big space to do that, because we really ran out of space across the street.
Uh-huh.
And you guys have seen it.
Is there anything left in this other space? Or is
around the corner on Walnut is empty. That's where we had the wine barrel warehouse. Right in front of us here, where most of the Bourbon County used to be, is we leased this space, so we handed the keys back over. We do have two warehouses a little bit further off to the side here that long-term is going to be just general storage. And then Sophie, since Sophie is a small percentage barrel-aged, mm-hmm. and we're making that very regularly, unlike Bourbon County, which goes away for a year, we need those Sophie barrels accessible, and so we're going to keep them close.
Okay.
But for the most part, everything we've has been moved wine and bourbon wise to the new warehouse.
Awesome. No, that space is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still figuring that one out, but, starting to get organized and getting to the point where we can really, you know, set up some structure to that place and not just be, I mean, again, this was so, it was poor lighting, poor drainage. We had to go 6 barrels high. We did what we did, and we did some remarkable things over across the street, but this new space is built out entirely for this one purpose, barrel aging.
Right.
Okay. Now, what I wanted to know, I'm glad we're here. What I wanted to know was, there was always this rumor, I don't know if anybody at Goose ever confirmed it, I haven't heard it yet, that, you know, BCS starts as Night Stalker and then it's aged. Or is there a difference between Night Stalker and what you age for Bourbon County?
Yeah, the Night Stalker is a dry hopped beer.
Okay.
But it is the same base beer.
Okay.
Just like Big John is the same base beer with cocoa nibs.
Okay.
We don't release Bourbon County Stout on its own. The base beer, that is, the Imperial Stout that becomes Bourbon County Stout, we do not release on its own. But yeah, we have done those two variants in the past, Night Stalker and Big John.
Yeah, those are both gone now, correct?
Yeah.
Like they're not.
We haven't made them again. The Big John was. I'll show you some pictures on my phone after this. Me cleaning out the tank after, I don't know, 500 pounds of cocoa nibs and a bunch of sludgy yeast were at the bottom of a tank, and it looked like a chocolate CSI crime scene.
And at that point,
it was a chocolate, liquid chocolate bomb went off. But that was a great beer. That was a great beer, Big John.
Nice. So now we got the regular Bourbon County.
So yeah, moving on to 2014 Bourbon County Stout. This one clocked in at 13.8. Of course, you don't really know what you're going to get with a barrel-aged beer as far as alcohol. And so every year we play this game of, you need to submit your alcohol so you can get approved, and then you can get your label artwork put in. And so what we've been doing the last couple of years is submitting a couple of different labels, because TTB allows you 0.3% swing.
Okay.
So if you say it's 14, it can be down to 13.7 or up to 14.3.
Oh, okay.
But as you know, with barrel-aged beers, there can be a lot of swing there, barrel to barrel, and certainly when you put the blend together, you're going to end up, you know, even though the same beer at the same alcohol may go in, you're going to end up with a different range over that year of aging,
right?
Different evaporation and whatnot. So it's always a bit of a last-minute struggle to make sure everything works out all right. And
so is this a little bigger than it was last year?
It's a little bit less, actually.
A little less.
Yeah,
okay.
We were in the 14s, maybe even close to 15.
Oh, geez, okay. Because it's kind of range. That's kind of the 13 to 15 has been the range for the years.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And an uptick, a downtick. but quite happy with this year's Bourbon County. I just think it's super smooth. A lot of those kind of berry and cherry notes pop out right away. It's one thing that a lot of people don't automatically associate with Bourbon County Stout, but
right,
certainly with this year,
bourbon and burn.
Yeah, you think vanilla, you think roast, of course, and a lot of caramel flavors. But there's just this year, more than in previous, in my mind, there's just a lot of great fruit character that's coming.
You think
out
that's from the barrels you use this time?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, the fruit and the aging effects.
Okay.
So
yeah, it's nice to see, like, you know, the alcohol bite kind of take a back seat in this year's vintage. You know,
yeah.
It's definitely not as pronounced as years past.
Yeah, the previous years, you certainly, the first whiff you get is that it's kind of a boozy alcohol. And it doesn't take away from the beer. The beer's, obviously great. It's this year, it's, yeah, I don't get that. And it just translates to a little bit smoother flavor. And maybe because of that, some other flavors are able to pop out.
Right, yeah. So this variation, this will be the one everyone should be able to get their hands on, right? I think.
Well, it's certainly the bulk of the of the volume. I mean, these are obviously small. Considering we're going to put out of Fulton Street, we'll probably put out 65,000 barrels, 70,000 barrels, something like that. This is a really small This is just a few thousand barrels
right.
total.
But this one reaches outside of Chicago, or the other ones, some of the other variants.
Yeah, well, all these should be, all these except for proprietors, should get a national play.
Nice.
Now, Bourbon County Stout, again, is going to be the bulk of that, because we focused most of the volume on that.
So the 65,000 barrels, that encompasses everything this year. That encompasses 2014, all variants.
Out of Fulton Street.
Okay.
So the AB breweries they're making 312, 312 Pale, IPA, Honkers.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They're going to account for quite a bit more than that, but out of Fulton Street, yeah. I mean, that's a rough estimate. I'm not always a numbers guy, but I mean, it's no secret that we're making less volume than we were when we're doing 312 around the clock. We're doing beers that are aging in the barrel for a year. We're doing Matilda that's, you know, in the fermenter. It's a 4 or 5 week beer. Sophie, 3-4 week beer. We're making beers that take a long time to make, and really focusing on those.
It's been really fun to see the shift in, like, you know, since 2012, of the cool stuff you've been able to do now that some of the other brands are moved out. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's, again, it's, as brewers, it allows us to kind of open up the space and get creative, and certainly take these barrel-aged beers to not only took more variance, but more volume as well. Again, incremental notches up. We can't just all of a sudden make Bourbon County a year-round beer. I don't think it ever will be.
Come on.
it would lose some of the, I guess, magic.
Yeah, of course.
Allure.
But it's, but you know, what we're doing right now is trying to carry the torch. You know, the torch was well lit, certainly by the time I got here 3 years ago. And so what we're trying to do is just carry the torch and keep a proud beer rolling, and come up with a couple of new ones every now and again.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And so now we've got the vanilla. This is vanilla and something else, right?
This is vanilla rye.
Just for
so
vanilla rye.
Rye barrels. And to that we added whole vanilla beans. Now we cut them up to really get at the core of them, which is gives you the bulk of the flavor. But this year we, again, people ask about differences or why we even decided to do vanilla again, and I guess the easy answer is it was probably the number one question wherever any of us went, particularly this year. Many of us traveled to other cities, and people that don't get to interact with Goose Island people on a regular basis or as much as they do here in Chicago, and the first question was always, when are you doing vanilla again?
Yeah, and it felt like it was the most.
And that's been going on for years. And
for many people, it's the holy grail. And that's not excluding rare.
Yeah.
Like, even rare included, vanilla is, like, top of the line.
Yeah, and so I think it really came down to, we looked at each other and said, well, how much longer can we say no? And, you know, and for good reason we said no. We want to keep forging ahead. But this had been a number of years now. I think 2010 was vanilla, and we said to ourselves, I think there's no other good reason to not do it again.
Yeah.
But have some fun with it and go in some new directions. So this year, rye barrels, and the other significant change was was changing up the beans a little bit. Now we did primarily Madagascar like previously, but we did throw in some Mexican vanilla beans as well.
Okay.
That Mexico is the origin of vanilla, and it produces a kind of a more earthy and chocolatey vanilla for me,
right.
Which I think offers a nice contrast.
Yeah, the aroma is great on it. You get that vanilla, of course, because then starts to smell like root beer.
Yeah,
think of that.
A little bit of like root beer, a little licorice. You get a little bit of that in there.
Yeah, again, I think the nose is great, and you get a lot of. I think what we've got this year, in addition to that classic vanilla flavor, is we pulled a lot of dried fruit character from the bean itself.
Okay.
I certainly get that in the middle flavor, and it's quite pleasant, and certainly I didn't quite expect it.
Now, can you walk us through the creative process a little bit here, like with regards to what beers you decide to make for the variants for each year? Because like what I was. Is there like a final list that are there some beers that you wanted to make but didn't quite make the cut, but you almost decided to bottle this year?
We believe me, I lost a lot of sleep in the first couple months of this year trying to, not just me, I'm sure plenty of people here. As you can imagine, this, when I mentioned carrying the torch earlier, it's, again, a fantastic beer and a lot of fun to make. But there's a certain responsibility. I mean, this is a beer that we know, we're very conscious mm-hmm. of the fact that people seek out this beer, they wait in line for it. It's highly sought after and highly regarded. And we're glad that people think that. But I think not only to ourselves as brewers, of course, but to a lot of people that are expecting great things, it's... there's a lot of expectations, and to that we sit in this room and or other rooms in the brewery and scream at each other and yell at each other. And you know, there, as Brett likes to say, like, there's nothing easy about these beers, you know, but they're so great because of the fact that we have to work hard for them. Right. And it really is the case. It's there's nothing easy about these beers, whether it's the decision, you know, the early days of, you know, what are we going to do, to doing, we do a bunch of small test trials with various ingredients, just trying to get an essence of how do these flavors play with these flavors. And up until now, over, you know, all these variants, it's, we've been really working with consonant flavors, flavors that are already within bourbon or within Bourbon County Stout, that or certainly play very well. You think about cocoa and coconut and cherry and berries and certainly vanilla. These are all elements that you can find in bourbon or Bourbon County Stout. And so we're just kind of accentuating them and trying to make them pop. But they naturally go very well with the spirits. So that's why it's more and more difficult to each year to come up with something entirely new.
Right, you're not just trying to pick some random
ingredient. We had some radical ideas, you know. you know, you send the brewers home with some beer and say, you know, go home over the weekend and come back with some concoctions.
Yeah.
And be inspired and go to your local markets and dig around your kitchen and, you know, what do you come back with? You know, come back with some inspired concoctions. And there were a lot, and a lot of them went in that outside of that consonant zone, which we're going to have to
turkey,
make a
bourbon.
Yeah. We had, you know, peanut butter.
I once had a, it was here, and, you know, just like on a little tasting, it was a Neapolitan BCS.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wild. It was really fun.
Yeah. I mean, we've played around with, I think, a variation much like that. And we had many really good ideas. We decided on, the vanilla, and what I'm pouring right now, the proprietor, is just because it really ultimately got people the most excited. Mm-hmm. What we kept coming back to is we got some interesting flavors with some of these, but it's, you know, I don't know if you've seen the bottles yet.
No,
I'm passing
it
over to you. Some interesting flavors, but, you know, they may be a tangent to what the base beer is, because it's pretty important for us to remember that and to never lose sight of the fact that, first and foremost, these are bourbon barrel-aged or rye barrel-aged beers.
Right.
You don't want to stray too far from course. But at the same time, it's a very bold base beer that needs bold flavors to pop out, right?
Right.
So it's this dance of what bold flavors work well with this base beer and can stand up to it and pop out but not take over. And that's the dance. And so I just poured you some proprietors. This is cinnamon bark, cassia bark. Cassia is the highest oil content of all the cinnamons. That's why we chose it.
Oh, okay.
Got cinnamon bark from the cassia bark from the Spice House down the street, or down Wells, rather. And we just used it in its whole bark form and recirculated the beer through it to extract the oils. We also did the same with some Congolese cocoa nibs.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at a couple different cocoa nibs, but ultimately decided on some nibs from this little place called Theo's Chocolate in Seattle, Washington, that Brett's very fond of. And their cocoa nibs, as they promised, but you know, when I asked for a sample to be shipped, they smell like a box of brownies, and indeed they do. So, so we used a bunch of those. It, as you can imagine, cinnamon is fairly easy to extract flavor mm-hmm. and certainly aroma from, but nibs take a little bit more coercing in time. But we found the right dynamic there. And then to that, we, inspired by whiskey cocktails, at least that's the moment I had, was, you know, we tried the cassia bark and we aged a little bit in some beer way back when. We felt like we were getting just a tiny bit of astringency that we wanted to counter with a little sweetness. So I remember sitting at a bar earlier in the year, and I'm not much of a cocktail guy, but I was looking over the menu, and they had a bunch of whiskey cocktails, and almost all of them had a simple syrup in them.
Here.
And so it kind of struck me, again, working with rye and bourbon barrels, that using a little bit of inspiration from whiskey cocktails and creating a simple syrup, but simple syrup, sugar, plain sugar and plain water seem very boring. So, you know, it serves a purpose in a cocktail, but in a beer, it's very boring. And so we wanted to do something inspired by that, but add some flavor. And so we used coconut water and panela sugar. Now, panela is a whole unrefined sugar cane. It's almost the most unrefined sugar you can get. It comes in these brown blocks that are very, it's not very granular at all. It's very tough to dissolve. But just a beautiful molasses character from just a great flavorful sugar. So from that, we made a not so simple syrup.
Okay. Why the coconut water?
Again, flavor. It's water. We wanted to just, you know, not stray too far from base and stick to a water, but coconut water. I'd wanted to use coconut water in a beer for a long time. There was no good way to do it. I thought one of my harebrained ideas was to use it as mash water. So,
That'd be expensive.
You could even, if you could even figure out a way to sparge with it too, you could do a beer that's entirely, you know, no water, no standard water.
Right,
you could do it all with coconut water. And there's a lot of, there's actually, you know, sugars and quite a lot of electrolytes in coconut water. Mm-hmm. So it's bringing some significant flavor to the equation, which is ultimately what I liked about it.
Okay.
This beer is good, man. It kind of reminds you a little bit of like a homemade, like Mounds chocolate bar or something, right? And it's a nice update from last year's proprietors, you know, a remix, if you will. Last year was what, toasted coconut, right?
Yeah, and that's it. So this one, we definitely got more ingredients going on in this one, and certainly more of a process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I missed out on this at FOBAB, so it's nice to finally try this. And it has like a nice spiciness to it that makes me want to just sit by the fire. Like that cinnamon just kind of lights up your mouth a little bit.
Yeah, I think the cinnamon, the rye, much like with the vanilla, there's a kind of a back end spiciness there from the rye barrels that really, you know, again, make it a great sipper, like you said. The cinnamon note was probably of the greatest, you know, the aroma in particular was of greatest concern to me, just because it's something that can easily be overdone.
Yeah.
We want to, ultimately, I think we hit our target. We want something present, but not, we weren't trying to do a holiday spiced Bourbon County style. That wasn't what we were trying to do. But cinnamon, this cinnamon in particular, just had such a great aroma that we wanted to capture that, but have it be part of a harmony rather than just be, oh, wow, it's cinnamon and nothing else. The cocoa nibs, I think, again, took a lot more time to extract, but ultimately I'm happy with what we got out of them. And then I think the simple syrup, again, was a small contribution, but it did its job. And I do get some coconut notes. I don't know if it's from the coconut or coconut water or I think the nibs provide a little bit of that similar aroma.
Yeah.
When extracted like that. I'm very happy with the beer. I think it turned out great.
And this will be the one that's only available here in Chicago, and you can get on Black Friday and might show up at a few other local stores around town. And so next we have the last one is the Bourbon County Coffee, which is a different coffee every year. You guys kind of spend a long time deciding on the coffee to use. And
yeah, there's always a process with this beer. Thanks. And so this is our, I believe it's our fourth version of Bourbon County Coffee. Now our next door neighbors are Intelligentsia Coffee right. Roasters, great coffee roasters, and we work with them every year to, pardon me, to whittle our way down. There's many different great coffees out there, many great coffee growing regions. And so we start with them early in the year and really start to focus on flavor. And we, because of that, we taste a bunch of coffee, do a coffee cupping session blind. And four different coffees.
Those are funny to watch because they got the little spoon in there.
Yeah, yeah.
You hear that noise a lot.
You sniff the dry grinds, and then you add a little water to it and sniff the wet grinds, and then you add some water to it, and you sip that, and you, like you said, like I'd never sat in a formal cupping session before, so it's a bit of an education for me. But you take your notes, and so after the cupping session, they reveal the two favorites, one of which was this Rwandan Zirakana, and because we took our two favorites and brought them here, taste them with the beer, and the Zirakana, the Rwandan Zirakana, was again the favorite. And we've used a couple of Central American beans in the last 2 years, the Los Inmortales last year from El Salvador, and then La Tortuga from Honduras. So we're quite fond of the Central American beans, and we tasted some that we liked, but ultimately this one went out. It's by far, I would say, the most bold coffee BCS yet.
Get some big, explosive, fresh ground coffee bean aromas from this thing. It's great. But then that taste doesn't, you know, it kind of drifts into something else.
Yeah.
It's not, you know what I mean? Like it's not a big, strong, bold flavor, but that aroma just comes right at you. It's great.
Yeah, it's, it is, why we like the coffee is it really worked. It was very compatible with the beer. It brought out the roast notes. There's roast notes and caramel notes in the coffee that, of course, are very compatible with the beer. And it just kind of enmeshed itself with the beer. Whereas some of the other coffees we drank, like there were maybe Central American citric notes that would sit side by side. Now, that makes for interesting coffee beers, but it's just more of a philosophy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, sitting side by side, I just mean when you would sip it, it's like you would taste coffee and then you would taste Bourbon County. And they'd kind of, it's like a chaser almost. Whereas this, I feel, really is enmeshed and it works well with the beer. They become kind of one and the same.
Yeah, this is great. I think, yeah. This is almost my favorite of.
I would agree. I think we're big coffee drinkers too, though. Yeah, so we kind of freak out when we get some good coffee.
Yeah, we love the Intelligentsia beans. We love what they do. It's such amazing access to not only great talent, but they're literally right next door. So when we pick a bean, which we did in the early spring, we say, this is how much we need, and they set it aside, the green beans, and they wait. And then come July or whatever it was that we brewed this, I go to Jay, hey, you know, we're going to need to brew next week. And he says, okay, we're going to roast today. We're going to off gas the next day. We're going to grind. And then you can literally come pick it up the day after that. And I drive the forklift over and pick up 1,800 pounds of ground coffee. And to that, we mix... A little over, yeah, it's a lot of coffee, and we make basically a double strength cold brew.
Okay.
That's how we make the coffee. So the coffee never touches the barrel. The beer gets extracted from the barrel, just like every other Bourbon County style, goes into a sanitized and purged stainless steel tank. But to that, in one of our smaller tanks, we mix grounds and water. A little over a pound per gallon, I believe, and let it sit for about a little less than a day, like 18 to 20 hours. And to that, you get a great cold coffee flavor and aroma without as much acidity and bitterness extracted from it.
Right.
Plus, it's very easy to do. As long as you've got time on your side, it would be much harder for us to build a gigantic drip coffee maker that could make.
They look good for pictures, yeah. But it's just.
That's in a nutshell. That's Bourbon County Coffee.
Are you on your system here? I don't know what 50 barrels.
50 barrels
system.
Mm-hmm.
Is this all just one turn? Like, is this you brew BCS once, throw it in barrels? You brew the base beer once, throw it all in barrels, and then you section off what's going to be variants. But it's just all one batch on the system in there.
As far as, do any of these have different base beers?
No.
Is that what you're asking?
No, it's like, is it? Let me figure out what I'm asking.
How many times do you brew the base beer to get the quantity? Is that what you're asking?
Oh, all year.
Okay.
Oh yeah. All right. It takes all year.
I confused myself with that question.
Okay.
Well, the only reason I mention that is because people have asked before, and we do the rye variants. The vanilla and the proprietors have a slight amount of rye malt added to the beer.
So they're different.
So they're a slightly different recipe, technically. But I think that's more of a token amount of rye. If anybody said, if we took it out, if anybody could detect it, I'd be simply amazed. But to go back to your actual question, when I say this is a labor and time intensive beer, it's no joke. It's to make this beer is a lot of grinding in of malt. You know, there's a lot of specialty malt, and you've seen our brew house that we don't have any super sacks or anything like that. It's all a bunch of Breese 50-pound bags loaded in by hand every 3 hours by a brewer. So it's very labor intensive, and we have to mash twice. So we mash in twice, run off twice, and combine that into one boil to get and then boil for 4 hours to get 40 barrels of beer.
Okay.
So to make 120 barrels of Bourbon County wort, you know, the base beer, the base wort, into the fermenter is about a day and a half, nonstop. So close to 36 hours, and it takes us the better part of a year to make enough beer to put into the barrels to release what we're releasing this year.
I guess that was my question.
Yeah. So it's the bottom line is there's. There's no way around it. There's no we haven't changed anything about it. It's we're carrying the torch. We're this. When you got something this good, it's just, you know what, we're gonna try to make process improvements along the way that may gain us a little bit of time back, but nothing that'll sacrifice any quality, of course.
Okay.
But I'm sure there's some inefficiencies that we can pick up on. But ultimately, we're super stoked with the beers this year. We're trying to make a little bit more every year.
Right.
You're talking about beers going out national, and we like where we're at as far as kind of a lineup. You know, producing five beers, Bourbon County beers, all on one day is no small task. But I think we got a pretty killer lineup.
You've ushered in a new era of Bourbon County Stout. I mean, it's a Chicago tradition. We kind of joke that it's one of the greatest stouts of all time. I mean, you know, when you guys started, nobody else really had a barrel program.
Sure.
How do you feel about being here now, watching it go national? Black Fridays are multiple cities.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the largest barrel warehouse you guys have ever been in.
Sure.
What's that mean to you? How do you feel about being here?
I was telling somebody the other day that I have to stop, and FOBAB's a great time to do that, and you know, we take a lot of time to stop and celebrate, without a doubt, but and it's important just to slow. We run at a pretty intense pace. I mean, most people think about Bourbon County Stout a couple days a year when they can get their hands on a bottle, and think about other beers on the other days, I'm sure, but I think about Bourbon County Stout every single day of the year because logistically it requires that much thought.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, we talk about brew house considerations, we talk about putting it in a barrel, we just got done with 3 straight months of taking it out of the barrel. And then our goal is to make a little bit more, and how do we do that? So...
Mm-hmm.
And then what are the variants going to be next year? What are you going to do next year? we've pushed ourselves in a pretty positive direction, and all for good reason. I think we've got some great beers in our hands, but I do have to, all of us have to sit back and just relax and say, you know what, it's in about 10 days time we get to enjoy. I'm going to go out to Binnie's, I'm going to go out to the pub, walk amongst the crowds and chit chat and pour some beer and really celebrate the folks that are coming out to and appreciating this beer so much, because we're making these beers for all of them. It's obviously we're tasting them here now and we get to enjoy them, but it's having this beer become what it has in the last couple of years is a pretty special thing, and that there aren't this many things like it in the brewing world,
right?
So we're pretty proud, and we're pretty thankful and grateful as well, without
right
a doubt.
Right on.
Awesome. Well, this was fantastic, and yeah, like you said, Black Friday is when they get released, and everyone can go buy them, go wait in line for them. Binnie's here in Chicago, probably the main places. The one on Mercy Street across from the Goose Island
absolutely
brew pub
absolutely
will be like the big hurrah there.
It'll be quite a spectacle, without a doubt, for sure. We're going to have some Intelligentsia coffee out there, the same coffee that's in this beer.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be pouring.
Nice. Hopefully it warms up a little bit for everyone.
Yeah.
It's going to be cold.
For a nice 60-degree Black Friday day. That'd be awesome.
Be lovely.
Yeah, not like the 10 degrees today. So, yeah, at the pub on Black Friday, man, they're going to have BCS 12, 13, and 14, and BCS Barley Wine from last year on draft all day. And then Cthulhu, BCS Coffee, Proprietors Vanilla, and Natulu, the pub offering Natulu, on tap at different times from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. So Black Friday at Clybourne.
I'm sure we'll mention it again next week on next week's episode. We'll be talking about it more, of course. But yeah, that'll do it for this week's episode. Thanks for listening. Nick, if people want to get in touch, how can they find out about you?
Right on. I'm on Twitter at Nicosio.
And I'm on Twitter at BRAD. Chicago Beer Pass is on Twitter at Chicago Beer Pass. Website chicagobeerpass.com. And we want to thank Goose Island for having us here.
Mike, this was great, man. Thank you for spending time with us, and especially breaking down these beers with us. This was great.
Yeah.
Cheers, gents. Thank
cheers
you.
Cheers. Thanks for coming out. Listening.